We each lay in our own box. And Curtis says, man, it's cold. I want a fire in mine. He wants a chimney in his box. So he lights his box on fire with him in it. And we're all in our own box. And his box is burning with him in it. And all I can see is his feet hanging out the back and smoke rolling out the top. He's like, yeah, my box is warm now.
Well, how does this story end?
The next victim is Kurt Cunningham, who was 23 years old, also of Uma. He was found, again, in one of these drainage canals and about 50 feet away from a highway. This is another instance of just discarding the victim. And so here at Real Crime Profile, we're glad we had an opportunity here to give these victims their voice back. And we would love to hear from our listeners if you could give us more information through our websites or Twitter in order to get these victims their voice again. Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. This is Jim Clementi, former New York City prosecutor and retired FBI profiler, also writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Laura Richards, criminal behavioral analyst, formerly of New Scotland Yard, and advocate, activist, and law changer, and director and founder of Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service, and also co-creator and producer of the show The Case of JonBenet Ramsey.
And I'm Lisa Zambetti. I am the casting director for Criminal Minds, where Jim Clementi is my colleague, and I have a real interest in real crime and the minds that solve those crimes and the friends and family of the victims of those crimes.
Well, today we have with us a very special guest. His name is Sean Lester, and we made a call out in our last episode to see if there were any people who would like to come on to tell us about some of the victims that we discussed in the last case. And we got contacted by Sean Lester, who wants to tell us about one of his friends. So, Sean, welcome to Real Crime Profile.
Thank you.
So do you want to tell us who your friend is and why it is that you contacted us?
So Kurt Cunningham is a friend of mine. We grew up together. Well, actually, I met him when I was probably 13 years old, all the way to his death. He's a very funny, very original character. Lots of laughter in the beginning stages. Towards the end, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of anger in his life, but, you know, more happiness than anger.
That's great. Well, tell us, where were you living at the time?
We live home in Louisiana.
Okay. Homa. So I've been saying Uma. Sorry. It's Homa, Louisiana. How far away is that from, what's the biggest city nearest to Homa?
New Orleans is about 50 miles southwest of New Orleans.
So I notice you don't say Nawlins. A lot of my friends who I've met from that city say Nawlins. Is that
New Orleans, Narlins, but around here it's called New Orleans.
That's great. Okay, thank you for giving us a local perspective on that. So, and at the time, was Kurt going to school with you? How did you guys meet?
So he was in foster care, and he didn't go to school with me, but I had a friend bring him to school to give him some food one day. We already knew each other before then, but it's one of his adventures we had with him. Because every day was an adventure with Kurt.
Really? Tell us about that.
We stay at my house one night. We stay at my friend Ryan's house one night. Then we go, hey, we stay at Kurt's house, which means we're sleeping somewhere on the street.
So was he pretty much homeless at the time?
I think he stayed in a foster care, but we kind of took it to the next level by pretending he was homeless and just not letting him go home or not worried about his foster parents. Mm-hmm. But as long as I've known him, he never stayed in one place.
Really? And so did he not have parents? Do you know what happened to his biological family?
Yeah, he does have a mother and a father. His mother died a few years back.
And what do you know what the situation was that put him in foster care?
No, I do not know. His brothers were there too. He has a pretty big family, brothers and sisters. I want to say three older brothers and three sisters.
Was he close with them, his brothers and sisters?
Oh, yeah.
So is he where is he in the siblings? Is he like in the middle or is he?
Closer to the youngest, I think his sister Jessica was a year younger than him. Total was Ricky, Scotty, Chris, then Kurt for the brother side. The sister side thing is Joelle, Sky, and Jessica.
Wow, that is a big family.
Yeah. I imagine with such so many kids, it's hard to place all them together. So they were probably separated. And do you recall that at all? Or
it could have been what it was. I know at one point with his foster parents, he was staying with Scotty. So I don't know where the other ones were.
So what was he like as a person? What were his likes and dislikes and, you know?
We skateboarded pretty often. He was such a funny guy. Anything he does will make you laugh at first. You know, when we saw probably 14 to probably 19, he was just super funny. Anywhere as we went, we didn't even have to have a destination. As long as we're with Kurt, something funny is going on. Something amazing is going to happen. Everybody wants to hang out with him.
Really? So he had a really magnetic personality?
Definitely, definitely. He had a lot of worries in his life, but it didn't broadcast that way. It broadcast like just living in the moment. He always lived in the moment, you could say. That's a good way of describing it.
Great.
Was he the joker of the class? I mean, was he sort of always the joker and a lot of laughs?
Yeah, he didn't like play practical jokes, but the way he said his words was just very funny.
What do you mean?
How he would interact with you or how he would talk with you. It was never like a practical joker. It was just more a comedian style where he could take a pencil and play with it and you'd be laughing over a simple pencil.
So would you say he was quick-witted, or, you know, how did he sort of come across to people he didn't know, or how did he interact? And
just makes you laugh. He could not even know you. And before, you know, the hour's up, you feel like you've known him for years, you know, just you feel so comfortable around Kurt.
Tell me about the place where you guys grew up. Is it really rural? Does everybody know each other? I mean, can you just kind of draw a picture for us?
Yeah, home. It's about 90,000 people back then. You know, probably 4 high schools, 5 junior high schools, a bunch of neighborhoods where people knew each other in the same neighborhood. With Kurt going different foster cares in different places, you would meet a lot of people you didn't know before through Kurt, because he knew people across all of Houma. Because some days he'll be on the west side of Houma, some days he'll be on the east side. So for Kurt's travels, it allows new people into your life. And then, you know, they would come and go. They would never stick around for long.
So this podcast will be heard in as far as London and Australia. People around the world will now know something about Kurt. How do you think he'd want to be remembered? Like, what do you think his best traits are? And what do you think the people of the world should know about Kurt?
Happiness, free-spirited. You know, his whole family was free-spirited. You know, lots of trouble in your life, but not letting it really control your action, just living in the moment.
And how was he about, you know, if somebody else was in need or somebody else was hurting, what was his reaction to a situation like that?
Yeah, he had his family, you know, a big family. They stuck together to help each other out when needed. As a stranger, I wouldn't know the answer to how he helped out strangers. I would like to think he did. Not sure about that scenario, but I know when his family was around, they helped each other out dramatically.
And how about you? How were your interactions with him?
Oh, it was great to have him around. You know, if he comes over and he had no shoes, you know, give him some shoes. If you want something to eat, no problem. You know, give him food. Sleeping overs. You know, he'll stay at my house for a few days, and he'll move on to another friend's house for a few days.
Well, I mean, we have the benefit of having you on Skype, and so we can actually see that you're actually smiling when you're talking about him.
Yeah, your face really lights up when you talk about it.
Lots of good thoughts. You know, we did have a falling out towards the end, but all my memories of him is very happy.
That's great. Well, I mean, when people are in a stressful situation, it is common to have those stressors you know, flare up and can become an issue with friends. But it's great that you have so many great positive memories, and clearly, like Lisa said, your face lights up when you're talking about the good times.
Yeah, I was just going to say, were there any sort of significant relationships in his life? I mean, you know, in the months before what happened, were there people that, apart from friends, or not so much?
Yeah, he had a girlfriend, and that was kind of the big change of his life when they split up. His whole attitude changed after that. Whole different person.
How long were they together for?
I'm not sure. 3-5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it was pretty significant. I mean, that's quite a long time to be with someone. And at that age, it's kind of, you know, you're quite impressionable, aren't you, on your first sort of few serious relationships.
Yes, very much for him. That was the love of his life. Yeah. You know, I contacted her this morning. She may be able to get in touch with y'all. I don't know if y'all are able to get in touch with her.
Oh, yeah.
That would be great. When did they meet?
I'm not sure. It's probably 14 or 15.
So they knew each other for a long time.
Oh, yeah. They would split up probably 2 years before his death.
And you think that was sort of a turning point, and things went downhill for him after that?
Yeah, for me, that's how I seen it. Once they split up, it was definitely downhill for him. You know, they kind of worked it out, but it was never a good scenario. You know, they fighting every day.
Were they living together for the time they were together?
Yeah. At one point, they was living together for a good while. After they split up, you know, of course, they was not together, but they would come back together here and there.
Right. And so, you know, in terms of what was going on for him mentally with the breakup, do you think he sort of was spiraling a little bit in terms of not having an anchor with her, and that it describes sort of what was going on for him?
Yep, that's how I see it too. You know, for him, that was everything he wanted, was in her. But for her, it didn't seem that way at the end.
So she was the one that broke it off, did she?
I believe so. I can't speak for her.
But when were they both 14 or 15 at the time that they met?
I think she's a year older than him, maybe two.
But still, they were both fairly young. So what happens sometimes is people grow up a little bit and they change. They develop differently. And that can sometimes break up childhood sweethearts.
Do they have any children together?
No children.
It seemed to me that, you know, for Kurt, somebody who was in and out of foster care, had so many different homes, that he probably wanted to have his own home, his own family, his own place. And I mean, did you get a sense of
that? Yeah, at one point he was working, I guess he was a tacker. It was like a welder's helper. And man, he was gung-ho at that point. They was together. He was working like 14-hour days. I didn't hear from him for like 2 months and didn't even know he was working. And he was trying to get his own place with her. I don't know what happened with that job, but yeah, at that point he was solid on working on that, making that happen.
What other kind of jobs did he do? I'm curious as to, you know, the things that he was into or could do.
Kurt, wasn't much work he did do. A lot of times, you know, he didn't have a job, but just at that point, he was working solid for a few months. But most of his life, he didn't have a job. Mm.
Can you describe, sort of, Sean, what was happening at the time and give us a sense of, you know, when we've looked at this case, it just seems incredible that so many young men were targeted and killed, and yet very little seemed to be being done about it. What for you was kind of going on? What perspective can you share of being there at the time?
So at first, Kurt was missing, and it wasn't too uncommon for him to go a few days or even a week without me hearing about him or other friends of mine not hearing from him. But when they discovered his body, it was a shock, you know, definitely a shock. But before that happened, you know, with the whole way of him living was in and out of places. So it was very uncommon for him, or I mean, very common for him to go so long. But I'm not sure exactly what was going on in his life those last few weeks.
When did you first hear about the fact that there may have been a serial killer operating in the area?
I would say after his death. It wasn't before. Or if it was, it wasn't news to me. It may have been on the news, and I just didn't think about it or care about it. But after one of your friends dies from that, it definitely gets your attention.
So what did you learn then at that point?
At first, it wasn't much details. The police officer actually took one of my friends in, thinking he had something to do with it. I went to the police station with him and help him stay out of trouble because they were just trying to find anybody to blame it on at first.
Really?
Yeah, there's, you know, well, I wouldn't say blame it on, but take anybody in, try to find any clues.
Did they take any DNA samples?
They put him in an interview room for a few hours. And he wasn't aware of his rights, so he stayed there longer than he should have. You know, and the police were going to bring him downtown. I actually brought him downtown and said to police to kind of let him know that I was there for him, too, so he wouldn't be alone in the police station. But he had nothing to do with this. He had nothing to hide. But
did they take a DNA sample? Do you know?
No, not that I'm aware of. And I don't believe so. My friend drank a lot of alcohol, so they kind of said that to him that maybe he don't remember doing anything, which means, but they kind of made him feel that way. So he was getting kind of worried.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's a fairly classic way to get a false confession. And it really should not be done by police officers in any circumstances, unless they have specific information about that particular thing. But, You know, it's used often in people who do have a lot of issues, substance abuse issues, and maybe also with people who aren't exactly that, you know, sophisticated or intelligent or criminally aware. And unfortunately, it can result, for example, in the case of Brendan Dassey, with information that looks like a false confession when, in fact, it has absolutely nothing to do with being guilty.
Right.
Well, this sounds like a good time to take a break to hear a word from our sponsors.
So you didn't get the sense that the police thought this was a serial crime. It sounded like it was a one-off. I don't know. He got into a fight with somebody, or it was for money or for something else. Is that the impression you got?
Yeah, they didn't give us much details at first. I don't know if the family had more or not, but as friends, we just knew they found his body. And I don't know if they had water or if he was in a ditch, but they didn't know how he got there. They didn't know pretty much anything about it. So I didn't know they connected him right away with the serial killer.
But you weren't aware of other young men at the time who had been killed?
Yeah, afterwards I was, because they actually found a body probably 15 miles from my house, and it was at his ex-girlfriend's next door to her place of employment. They found a body in a storage facility. It was really striking close to us. We was getting kind of worried that, you know, maybe a whole lot more. You know, we didn't know what his motive was for attacking people at the time.
So, but that was, again, after Kurt was killed?
Yes.
Yeah. And so before Kurt was killed, were you aware that there was, you know, a whole bunch of other victims? Like, did you hear that in the news? Were there any protests? Were there any media conferences or anything? Any words from law enforcement of caution from young men? Anything like that?
For me, it was just my friend died, and at the time, it was unrelated. Later on, it may have got more exposure to the serial killer and connected the dots a lot more, but at that time, when Kurt's death, it wasn't a lot of that.
And when did he go missing? Did he actually go missing that you actually noticed it? Do you remember around the time?
So I called my friend this morning to confirm my thoughts. He says he was gone a lot longer, but I recall him staying at my friend's house 4 days before he was missing.
How did you find out that about his death, if you don't mind sharing?
Through another friend. I don't remember which friend it was, but we hung out probably 10, 12 friends in a big group, and one of them caught word saying they found his body. Now it's the beginning of it.
Were you shocked when you heard that?
Definitely. Never had a friend came up missing or dead. So it was a first time for me. Unbelievable. I couldn't accept this reality at first. I was thinking maybe they're mistaken, somebody else.
Did you have any contact with his family at the time when this happened? They must have been in shock and overwhelmed with this news.
No, but the first time I came across his family was at his funeral, and they was upset. All his friends were there. They had a private funeral at first, and the next day they had a public funeral. And I remember the media coming to the public funeral, and they kind of restricted them, blocked them off, told them to get out of here.
What did they feel had happened? I mean, were they given any information from the police or?
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I haven't talked to their family about that. His brother Scotty comes to my house pretty often. We're pretty close friends, but we don't talk about what happened.
And then what sort of happened from there on out? Because there were other men that were killed afterwards. I mean, did you feel angry about what was going on, or what was sort of the mood of once you learned that there were other people?
There was nobody I knew, so I wasn't worried about it. And that's kind of mean to say, but it happened to one of my friends. The rest of the people, I have no idea who they are. When we heard that it was gay men or bisexual men, it really threw me for a curve.
Well, are you aware of the fact that he also killed men by luring them, not because of sex, but he would lure some men, for example, by saying, by showing a picture of a woman saying she wants to have sex with a guy, and this is my wife, and I can't have sex, so I'm just trying to find somebody to have sex with her, something like that.
Some stories online, I've heard that from there, but at the time they didn't say anything other than, what I said earlier about bisexual or gay men, and it was just totally shocking for me.
Yeah,
As
but
long as I've known Kurt, never have I heard those words put together with his name in it.
yeah. So, I mean, just for your own sanity or whatever, you don't have to think that just because he became a victim of this particular offender that there was any indication of that in his life. But it could very well be that he used a different ruse with Kurt than he used with some of the other guys.
Yeah.
And he was good at exploiting, people's vulnerabilities, and that's really, manipulating people, what he was doing. And unfortunately, a number of people crossed paths with him at the wrong time. And I think that's the travesty in this particular case that so many people did, and that he seemed so unassuming that they obviously didn't feel he was a real risk to them, to their safety. But of
Yeah,
course,
with
he
Kurt,
was.
he met new people every day. So I'm guessing when Kurt met this person, just same as everybody else he met in his life.
Right. I mean, he could have lured him in his truck. Let's go get a beer. Let's go. I mean, it didn't necessarily have to be the other ways that he lured people in. I'm wondering, can you just describe Kurt physically? We only have this little thumbnail, very blurry picture of him. I can barely see him, but it looks like he just woke up out of bed. His hair is kind of all over the place and
Yeah, he has a naturally curly hair. You cannot brush his hair. It never stays down. He used to always wear a little Crown Royal sack to put his change and little knickknacks in. He was fairly skinny, about 5'3", a little bit short, hyperactive. He's sitting down, his legs shaking. He's just super active type of person.
Now, I have to ask, what's a Crown Royal? It's something that it's not in my vocabulary. So, can you describe or just say what that is?
It's a bag that comes with alcohol. They wrap their alcohol in this bag, particular brand.
Like a velvet pouch, or
It's
yeah.
like a blue vel. Is it? I don't know. Blue velvet pouch with like gold writing on it or something
And a
like that.
gold string.
You got a little gold string on it, and it's at that age, it's very popular to have that, to show that off. Kind of like a status symbol in a way.
Is
It was
it?
kind of cool, was it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm clearly not very cool because I have to ask what it is. I have no idea.
It's from Canada.
But
Do you have any stories you'd like to tell? That you said you guys were skateboarding and things like that. Do you have any stories that you want to tell that would kind of give us a sense of what Kurt was really like?
Yeah. I said before, he'll sleep at my house and he'll sleep at a friend's house. And it was Kurt's turn. We're sleeping at Kurt's house, so we'll be camping out that night. And it was kind of a cold night. Not really cold, but, probably 40 degrees at night. And we're walking down the street in about 15, 16 this time. We found some cardboard boxes and refrigerator boxes. You each had one. And we're carrying on side of the busy highway. And I'm carrying mine all carefully. And my friend Ryan's carrying his all carefully. And Kurt just throws his on his head. Like he's in the box walking down the street and all you see is his feet. And we're right next to this busy highway. And you can't see cars coming. You can hear them, and you can see the lights. And he's just being so careless with being him, just so funny. And he's just like, yeah, I got this. I got this. Don't worry. Don't worry. Don't worry. And we just walk into the woods. And we put these boxes down. And we each laying in our own box. And Kurt just says, man, it's cold. I want a fire in mine. He wants a chimney in his box. So he lights his box on fire with him in it, and we're all in our own box. And his box is burning with him in it. And all I can see is his feet hanging out the back and smoke rolling out the top. He's like, yeah, my box is warm now.
Well, how does this story end?
Sounds pretty risky to me. He set himself on fire.
Yeah. I don't remember the box burning out completely, but it was, I don't know, it was just so funny just seeing his feet hanging out the end and the smoke rolling out, like thick smoke rolling out. He's just like laughing. Oh, it's so warm in my box.
Wow. Well, that is a great story to tell. That gives us everything we need to know.
And that was Curtis. I remember him before he broke up with his girlfriend. Every moment was like that. It's just so funny. And you can just take the simplest thing, and with Kurt, he has everybody laughing.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a friend like that, too. And I always say, wherever Kenny goes, that's where the party is. Because you literally don't need anything else but him, and he'll find a way to be cackling out loud and getting everybody else laughing. It could be the most, boring set of circumstances. But when he was around, we always had fun.
Definitely. That's how Kurt was, definitely.
Well, we want to thank you so much for doing this. I mean, I really want to thank Ashley, your girlfriend, who I guess is a fairly regular listener. Ashley, you there?
She's filling up the water right now. Ashley?
Yes, I am obsessed. So when I heard about this, I was super excited because I wondered why nobody had talked about it. And I knew that y'all would talk about the victims and not the killer. So I was very excited.
Thank you. Well, and we really appreciate that you understand where our perspective is, because, there's so much. You can go online or on TV and see so much about the bad guys. And we are just dedicated to giving the victims a voice, because both Laura and I, throughout our careers, that has been our motivating factors. And I remember when I started writing on Criminal Minds, and also many times over the last 12 years, that they would say, what about this serial killer or that serial killer? They'd throw out names. And I'd be like, I have no idea who you're talking about. They're like, what? He's like the most famous serial killer. And I said, no, I don't have any idea. I said, who did he kill? Because those are the people I know. Those are the people I care about. When we arrested the guy, I forgot about him in 5 minutes. I didn't give him any more space in my head. But the victims I try to remember. And I think that's a really important thing. And it's one of the reasons why we're doing this podcast to begin with.
Well, and I'm so glad. Like when I first started working in HOMA, I read about it. And I spent probably a year trying to find out about the victims. And there's nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah,
there's nothing about these people.
They were treated like not equal, second-class citizens, not worthy of anything, any media attention, any protest, or any concerted effort on the part of law enforcement. And that really pisses me off. And, you know, it doesn't actually undo the damage or bring them back, but we are very happy to be able to at least give them a voice again so that that people remember them for who they were. And that story you just told us was not only was it hilarious, but dangerous, but also very, very illuminating about what Kurt was like. And again, you know, I could see the your face light up and you're smiling when you're talking about him. It's clear that you still have, you know, him in your heart.
Yeah.
You know,
and
he's
now,
still your friend.
Yeah. And now many of our listeners will, you know, feel that too and make him a real person and not just a name on a list.
So thank you, Ashley. And thank you, Sean, for describing your friend. And, you know, we really do want to make sure people are seen as people and humans and that they lived a life before they sadly were brutally killed by someone who does not deserve our airtime.
Right.
So you have to live with this every day. You know, we don't, but we do want to make sure that we redress the balance as much as we can. So I really appreciate talking to you, zoning in from London to LA to New Orleans. So thank you.
And we're hoping that it also encourages other people to come forward to talk to us, because we'd really like to hear about the other victims who are still out there without any information about them. And that hurts us. We don't want that to happen. We want to give people a voice. So if you have any friends and any of our listeners who are out there, if you know anybody who does know any of these victims, in this case or other cases that we've talked about, we'd love to talk to you. And we really, really appreciate it, Sean.
We cannot thank you enough. And I know if Kurt's looking down at you, he's probably, you know, raising hell in heaven. And he's so glad that you talked about him and did him justice. So, you know, thank you so much.
Yeah, and you gave him so eloquently a voice when his voice was taken away. So I'm sure he's up there smiling down on you in his cardboard box and smoking chimneys and thinking, thank you, my friend, for doing me proud. And that's really what we want to do, is just give color and life to the people and honor their lives. And part of it is learning from what happened to them as well, educating people. So we really thank you for your time and sharing your friend Kurt with us.
So we really want to thank you, Sean and Ashley. We really appreciate you being here today, and we will always remember Kurt now.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, guys, have a good day.
Signing off on Real Crime Profile.
So if you want to help us out on the show, please can you go to wandry.com/survey and complete the little survey about us. And it shouldn't take more than 5 minutes. You can even do it from your phone. So that's wandry.com/survey. It will take you just a few minutes to complete, and it will really help us out, giving us some more information about you and why you listen to Real Crime Profile.
So if you enjoy our podcast and would like to support us, there are a couple of important things you can do. First, you can go over to iTunes and give us a positive 5-star review. You can check out our sponsors and take advantage of the special promotions for Real Crime Profile listeners. You can go over and like our Facebook page, and you can follow us on Twitter. But most importantly, you can share our podcast with friends, family, and anyone you know would be interested in real crime and the minds that solve those crimes. So thank you for listening.
Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineered by Terrell Parham. Music composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203 866 4107, or you can go on the website www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic violence, call the National Domestic Violence Helpline free phone 0800 2000 247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, safety, shelter or counselling, call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, 214-946-4357, or go on their website, www.genesisshelter.org, or the Domestic Violence Hotline on 800-799-7233.
If you're a regular listener to the show, you know we have great brands like Blue Apron, Audible, and Casper advertising with us, and they keep coming back because our listeners really respond to them, which we're really thankful for. Well, if you happen to own a business or manage the advertising buy for one, then you should consider advertising on Real Crime Profile. Podcast advertising is on the rise, and it's one of the most effective ways of reaching consumers on the go today. So please go to wondery.com/advertisers. Again, it's wondery.com/advertisers. And get in touch with us. Thanks.